Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hi, my name is Will Morgan from A Few Shots to Shaman, and this is Douglas Boyles from A Mask or The Mask of God. And
this is 44th minute. It's a weekly check-in with what's thinking now.
Right now, yes. But actually, to start off right now, I guess we can talk a little bit about what happened last week.
Right, so last week, Will and I got together, and we spoke just about what we were seeing and thinking about. And one of the things that I mentioned on the last call was the idea of the quantum worldview versus the classical worldview. And I wanted to explain that just a little bit more because I don't know how clear I made it. But what I wanted to reiterate was the idea that as far as people go, we fall into this trap of thinking that things are certain, and that's what classical physics is all about, the idea that you can know a definite state of something. And so we fall into this idea that I am Doug and Will is Will, and we are definitely separate things. But
yeah, okay, I get what you're saying now. You're talking about it as far as like a quantum perspective. So, like, you're talking about classic physics is certainty, quantum is uncertainty, and then the quantum perspective is never being certain of anything?
Right, but so within the quantum perspective, if you observe how things behave, you'll find that there a pattern emerges, and so there's a general state that you can count on for any particle or whatever. It's just if you try and figure out, if you ask the black or white question of something, you know, you're going to get a black and white answer, but it's not necessarily true. It just means at that moment in time, you know, you say, okay, are you alive or dead, you know? Sure, you know, the thing is alive or the thing is dead, but that doesn't mean that that's the truth. It just means for that moment, that's the answer. And so, as you know, if you were to consider how it's fascinating to me that, you know, sync kind of falls nicely into the idea of quantum theory, in that.
Yeah.
What we're proposing is that the separation that we perceive in everyday reality is not as solid and real as we think. Therefore, you know, the quantum view might actually be more true. So that, you know, is something dead or alive? Yes. You know, so it's more true in that you're alive right now, but, you know, what does that mean? You know, and what is time and blah, blah, blah. So,
Well,
when I talk about a classical view, it's this notion that, you know, that there's
separated
certainty that, you
right.
know.
Right. Divided up.
Right. And so I don't know if I did... If I made matters worse or not, but that's something I wanted to follow up from last week. That it's so
not like what you're trying to say is easy to get out, though. I mean, I don't hold that against you at all. But
so it's one of the things that really tickles me is the idea that the notion of sync fits really nicely into the quantum theory, that, you know, quantum theory basically says that there's a unity of everything, that once you try to separate things, you find that you can't. And so this, you know, last week I kept saying traditional consciousness, and then saying, you know, speaking in the same breath of new consciousness. And I'm, you know, we're kind of moving in that territory with us, you know, thinkers as the forefront of this idea of viewing the world from a quantum perspective, which is, you know, something scientists don't do. You know, they say they wear two hats, where there's their quantum hats, and then their, you know, where they deal with the quantum stuff, and then they put their reality hats back on and come back to the subject and object and certainty and separation. And so, you know, it's just it's the notion of think. So there was that.
I can see what you're saying, but I mean, is there any room for it not to be strictly quantum? Because I mean, there is the possibility that a lot of this is on purpose. Or do you think that, like, say the movie directors and stuff are actually thinking along these deep terms, and that just comes out in their artwork? Or do you think that they're trying to lead you to that belief system? I mean, is it?
I know what you're saying. You know, how come we're at this point in time right now where everything seems to be cohesive as far as our worldview and what's coming out in the media?
I mean, I don't know. There's a certain amount of inevitability to it. Because you also asked me to talk about composite characters, so we could easily segue into that right now because, like, we know that, say, an actor like Kevin Spacey's voice is used on commercials because we're familiar with it. You know what I mean? So there is
real
a certain
fast
amount of coaching.
Hey, let's say someone's just joined us, you know, for the first time. What is a composite character?
Okay. All right. A composite character is to see an actor's career without boundaries or separation by the movie. So if you want to think of it as, like, you know, how a film is just a collection of pictures that you see consecutively, right? So there's no real difference between one movie and another except for, say, our, you know, for just our definition of this movie is, sorry, this movie is called, like, whatever, let me think of an actor, like Leonardo DiCaprio, okay, this movie is called J. Edgar Hoover, and this movie is called Blood Diamond. But in all actuality, if you kind of blur them together, that's about that.
how about Hugo Weaving?
Okay, well, Hugo Weaving is a good one, especially because it has to do with what we were talking about last week as far as Occupy Wall Street. So Occupy Wall Street is basically frontmanned by a group of people called Anonymous, whose symbol that they put out there is a man in black with a question mark on his head standing in front of the UN symbol. So it's a man in black, which Hugo Weaving represents in The Matrix. Also, Anonymous uses V for Vendetta, which was also done by Hugo Weaving. So the reason I explained it that way is because it shows the multi-texture. It's not just like smashing up individuals' movies, but it also how that relates and is used in other areas other than just cinema. So even in the news, the group Anonymous has used Hugo Weaving as like his composite character is like a representation of what's going on right now as far as Occupy Wall Street and everything.
Okay.
As far as symbols, I mean, these are big symbols that these people are using. I mean, they're using that Guy Fawkes mask, which is, I mean, it's just ridiculous what that means. But you also have to think about if that's on purpose, like what we were just talking about. So, I mean, what is portrayed in The Matrix? In The Matrix, what happens is the Hugo Weaving character, which is Agent Smith, takes over the whole populace of The Matrix. And Neo is like the exact opposite of that. And Neo has to actually assimilate himself into the Agent Smith reality to bust it loose. And then that's the same thing that happens in V for Vendetta, too, because at the end of V for Vendetta, everybody ends up donning the Guy Fawkes mask. So it's like a winning of independence through losing your identity. And that's fucked up, though, because what if that's intentional? I mean, is that a coaxed idea?
Okay, so that's the interesting question to me. So, and with a lot of think conversations, you return to this. What's intentional, or, you know, what's being orchestrated, and what is, you know, what is just part of the fabric of existence? And for me, I don't touch the paranoid stuff anymore at all, just because there's no way to know, you know. It's like the idea of trying to figure out what something is by its shadow, and all you can do is guess. And so, and then it's just too big to feel like it's orchestrated, in my opinion.
Right, it is. So it's more quantum, though. You'll never know. You'll never know if it is, like, alive, which is what the universe is doing it, or dead, which is controlled. I mean, it goes back to the question, it's like an unanswerable question. It's exactly what you were talking about at the beginning, but...
Right. And
but I mean, there are composite characters that aren't so nefarious. I mean, because, like, Hugo Weaving is big. He's Megatron, too. But he's also, what was the other? Oh, he's Elrond out of the Lord of the Rings and stuff. And all of these have, like, enormous implications of, like, it's in varying themes and crisscrossing patterns. It's real strange. But some aren't as, like, obvious. Like, actor Owen Wilson. To composite character him, just on a short list of his movies that have a connection would be Marmaduke and Marley and Me. Marley and Me, he has a dog that is uncontrollable, and Marmaduke, he is a dog that is uncontrollable, and both have the double M play on words, but that doesn't mean anything. It's like almost fucking pointless. It's not as nefarious as like Hugo Weaving or anything. I mean, that's the type of stuff that lets me know that it's more fun than... like, scary, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like my own journey, I had to go through conspiracy, but then as deep as I could get in there and was really paranoid that I just had to, I mean, so thinking mysticism was the way I found my way out. And then, you know, this was a while ago, but... since then, it's easier not to take on any of the conspiracy. Just, you know, so it's...
I'm sorry. It's my fault that I even brought it up. I watched the movie The American last night. Have you seen it yet?
George Clooney? No.
Yeah. With all the talk that was going on the sinkhole about America and stuff, and I hadn't really planned it, I just got in bed last night and it happened to be on HBO. But he's like some kind of weird murderer. And but there's a lot of butterfly symbolism. They call him Mr. Butterfly. He's got a tattoo of a butterfly on his back. And he always rides out to this place where these rare butterflies are. And during his death scene, a butterfly is seen floating up. And it's just weird because, I mean, of all the symbols they could have used, they used one that was highly... associated with conspiracy theory. So it just had me wonder. It was the last thing I saw last night and the first thing I'm thinking about this morning. And it's not that I believe conspiracy theory or anything. I just think it's unavoidable to bunch it with you have to use it with synchromysticism. I mean, synchromysticism first came from conspiracy theory.
Right. Well, if you talk about Robert Anton Wilson's, you know, Illuminatus, that's a pretty good example where, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek and fun, but, you know, he's definitely doing both, where there is a nefarious organization trying to orchestrate some end, but at the same time, you know, it's much bigger than any, I don't know, see, maybe I'm not far enough into that book, but it seems like he's joking about the conspiracy as he's showing you the conspiracy.
Yes. It's,
you know,
it's did some serious shit wrapped in dick and fart jokes.
Right. There's that line in, is it JFK or Joe Pesci says, it's an enigma wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in a, you know, the whole burrito of unknown. And it's basically, yeah, a black swan burrito. And that's it.
I love it. Well, I think it's interesting, too, because we were talking about the movie Anonymous coming out on the 28th and what it had to do with what we're talking about. And it's actually a man in black, too, on the face of the cover with his back turned, which is usually a symbol of the shadow. But anyways, it's about William Shakespeare, who was accused of being a Rosicrucian because of the symbolism that's found in Shakespeare. It's very Rosicrucian, but it's also alchemical, and it's got... It has symbols in it. Like, a lot of people have become obsessed with Shakespeare, like, you know, kind of like what we're doing. We're obsessed with pop and figuring out its mystery. Well, I've done that with Shakespeare over and over and over again.
Well, Shakespeare was pop at one point in time.
Yeah, exactly. So, but he could have been the start of symbolically, you know, subliminally slipping shit in. It's like, you know, it's like carrying on the torch. There's real no difference between the
I think that's what Aiken shows, too, that they're
equally influenced by Shakespeare. What's not?
I think you're right. I think that this movie is going to try and show how he was trying, or whomever was using the plays that Shakespeare was writing. Yeah. I think that's the point of the movie, that they're manipulating reality or the political situation through these plays, but, you know, the plays that aim to catch the conscience of a king. The only way you reach people is through a story. You can't say you need to behave differently. You have to actually reach, you know, their heart by showing them cuddly monsters doing whatever, you know.
So you have to. I mean, it's an inevitability. You have to. These programs are necessary. That's another comfort I find is through people like James Campbell and stuff like that, who studied all of these myths and saw them, you know, saw them interacting in ancient times way before we have our modern way of entertainment. So it's like this has been going on for a long fucking time, and it's an inevitability. Like, you can't tell a story without going through at least one of these archetypes. You know what I mean? Like, it's impossible.
Right. It's part of the fabric. That if you write a story, it's going to be. And if you look at the deck of tarot, you can see that, you know, that's pretty much the book of stories right there. You know, whether your story is one card or all the cards, and one card basically is all the cards at any given moment. So it's kind of,
I see what you mean.
We're limited to, you know, it's the Indra's net, you know, the one point in space, the Aleph, the one point in space resonates all the other point in space. You know, we get back to interconnection and, you know, inseparability real fast. So, but it's fun to talk about, so. I got a whole bunch of sync books this week, and...
That's right.
You know, I'm going to start... I don't know how to begin reading these things. You know, it doesn't seem like it's the kind of thing where you need to start on page one and work your way through, although, you know, the bit that Jake has featured at the front of the book is a nice little chunk of text I always like. Nothing in existence is fundamentally divisible or separate. All things and events, even the observer of things and events, are part of an inseparable union. I like the way Jake writes. But I think I'm just going to, you know, I think in typical fashion, I'm just going to kind of see what calls me. Last night I read Jennifer Palmer's piece, and it was delightful. I really enjoyed it.
I've heard talk that hers has a lot to do with 9/11.
It does, 'cause, and she related her own personal that's what's fun about her piece, is that she started seeing the towers before they fell down because she lives there. So for weeks, and maybe it was months, you know, she was obsessed with the towers before it happened, and then after the event, she didn't know how to process that, you know, the sink that happened before. She didn't know what to do with that, and then she looked and looked and eventually found Jake, you know, and that his Zen practice of thinking kind of eased her into harmony with the idea that, you know, what she was seeing was, you know, I don't know, the future, or, you know, a warning or whatever. But so, you know, her piece, the first half was that, dealing with her 9/11 sinks before 9/11. And then the second half was her experience in Winnipeg. And she did a beautiful job of describing, you know, Winnipeg and moving through the, you know, the cityscape with Twitter and Jake and Jim and movies and stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it would be fun to talk to her just because she's had such a big year as far as, you know, so last year she went to Winnipeg and this year she was at Burning Man, and I think Reality Sandwich had a conference somewhere out in Utah. I would be curious to just, you know, hear, because right there, they're somehow credibly on the front lines of sync, where they're getting people to support, you know, their endeavors monetarily, whereas we end up being hobbyists because we have to have day jobs to support sync endeavors.
I heard Jennifer Palmer also put out a sync book at the Occupy Library in New York.
Yeah. That would be another interesting thing to talk about, because I think she's physically there. Is Kevin occupying something? That impression?
Yeah. Kevin's definitely an occupier, I would say yes. She's out pictures, he's played at certain things. I know that he's gone to quite a few of them in New Paltz, and I hope I'm saying that wrong or right or some kind of way, but...
Oh, that's funny. So I opened up the sync book, and it just fell naturally to the middle of the book, which is, you know, it makes sense. And who do you think is the author featured at the center of the sync book?
Kevin Halcott.
Yes. I think the sync book...
I think that we should ask to talk to Kevin Halcott first.
Well, it's 368 pages, and so 184 is
What's
Kevin.
What's entitled? What's Kevin's entitled?
His piece is entitled The Synchromistic Aura, and I read it before I sold my last batch of sync books. I get a bunch sent to me, and then I end up selling them, and I didn't keep any for me, but this one's mine now. I took it in the back.
Kevin Halcott, he just put out a brand new movie too.
Yeah. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it. I did check it out, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I enjoy everything Kevin does.
I do too.
I can't remember the title of it though, so let me find it real quick so I can remember more about it. It was
something about the ones, keeping the ones.
To the one in all things. That's right. That's right. Thank you. But he included the fountain and how it relates to the Christ, and it's just really good how Kevin has a very spiritual side to his work for sure. There's no doubt about that.
Well,
all new videos include. How much time we got left?
We got lots of time. 12 minutes. 16 minutes,
okay. Well, I just want to say this before I forget. Barely Human 11 channel on YouTube. There's a gentleman by the name of Joe Alexander. His videos are extraordinary. Right now, he's only got two. Both are about Christopher Lloyd. This is part two to that. Because Lloyd, our Christ bearer, and then Lloyd's disciples, I think, is this next one. But both of them are mind-blowing, reminiscent of old Katsa videos. and extremely well researched, ridiculously well researched. I can't believe I'm looking at it now, or maybe this is something else, but he must have a link up for his other video, must be on Vimeo. Never mind, I'm rambling. What were you saying?
I was going to say, is there some connection to this Christopher Lloyd? So one of the images that I see is Christopher Lloyd hanging off the clock in Back to the Future. So
right.
In my mind, there's this deep connection between Lloyd and time. And then I found this other classic video of a guy hanging off a clock. And the video is called Lloyd on the Clock. And so I wonder, it was a piece of classic.
Well, he, I think he figured out, how did he say Christopher? He figured out Lloyd's holy man, Christ bearer, holy man. Christopher means Christ bearer. Lloyd means holy man. And then he breaks it down and he represents, you know, what we've all talked about before. Lloyd's, that's a battle with the clock. And it's overcome by a lightning bolt. And see, that's the fight between Kronos and Jupiter. Time, Jupiter overcomes Kronos, who tries to eat his son with the rock. So he relates the whole fight with time as far, but that's interesting because Christ, our whole calendar system is based off of Easter, and it's based off of the fact that Jesus is dead on Saturday, you know what I mean, and resurrects on Sunday. So it's all the time has to do with this continuous fight between Jupiter and death or Jesus and time.
Well, that's interesting because I've been reading this book called About Time by a guy named Adam Frank, and it's really digging in deep as far as how we connect to reality through our notion of time and how artificial, 1217 is fairly meaningless, but we give it all kinds of meaning because of how we record and keep time, whereas the cross, the equinoxes and solstices are really solid points in the year because this is synchronous time where it's the earth in sync with the heavens. And now it's interesting, I think part of what we're doing is trying to bring an awareness of the larger whole, which is, I mean, and that's funny too, because a lot of those early conspiranoia videos mixed
conspiranoia.
There was this connection between religion and the astronomical story that's being told, with Sirius and how seasonally the stars behave, saying. Trying to state, basically the thrust was, the religious stuff isn't real because it's just reflecting the story of the heavens. It's like, no, it is real. It's just you can't separate the two stories, the heavens and the archetypes reflect one another.
Yeah, above, so below.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not deep enough into this book to really
About Time, Cosmology and Culture of the Twilight of the Big Bang, Adam Frank.
Yeah, I'm loving it, but it's, it's all the stuff that I'm really interested in, so I'm sure I'm going to
talk about culture. I mean, cosmology and culture at the Twilight of the Big Bang, it's basically, I don't understand it. Is it hinting at cosmology and culture mixing together?
Well, they are, but it's hinting at our cosmology is determined by scientists, so it's a scientific understanding of the universe. So everyone's taught about the Big Bang, and this is basically what we moderns have. But the basic question is, what happened before the Big Bang? And, that question can't be asked or can't be answered because, there is nothing, there's just infinite density before the Big Bang. So as far as a mythological story that makes any sense, as far as, you know, because the cosmology is supposed to give the tribe meaning, I'll have to tell you where he arrives. But I think, you know, what he's saying is that our notion of the Big Bang is kind of breaking down, and that we're moving into a new area where the stories that we've been told don't cut it right now.
Right. That's what Campbell said too, is we our stories have to evolve as we evolve.
Yeah, and he also would say that we didn't have, you know, everyone had to find their own personal stories, which we're doing, but as far as like a public story that everyone knew was the public story, you know, basically a cosmology, that was lacking now.
Now. Let's see, how much time do we have left? It is 10:17, so we got about 10 minutes left. Is that correct?
Right.
Exactly. Okay.
Well, not exactly. We have 9 minutes.
9 minutes. Okay. Well, just give me a heads up. Let's see. This weekend opening up, we have Puss in Boots, In Time, The Rum Diary. Have you seen posters for The Rum Diary yet? It's a new Johnny Depp movie coming out. You
yeah.
seen that?
I saw one poster for that. Because speaking of composite characters, then we're back to kind of this Fear and Loathing. It looked like,
It looks like Fear and Loathing Part 2. And it's weird, too, because he's wearing a hat on it, and then, you know, we've talked about Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter, but if you go back and you look at his composite character, there's always an attention to the hat. And even in his personal life, too, he always wears hats, but that's another story. Although this is continuing the theme. Then there's Anonymous, and after that there's Light Crazy. There's a movie called Sleeping Beauty that I'm interested in coming up. On into November. Get this, on November 9th, which would be 11/9/11, right? J. Edgar Hoover comes out in limited theaters. But they're bringing that out on 9/11. They're bringing, like, J. Edgar Hoover, Leonardo has a lot, I mean a ton. His composite character is all about conspiracies. He's yelling conspiracies in Shutter Island, but he's also Howard Hughes, who was like one of the main conspiracy guys back in his day. He was the one who basically said everybody was paying off the courts because he himself was doing it. And then on November 11th, which is 11/11/11. There's a movie called 11/11/11, of course, coming out. But there's also The Immortals coming out. That's an interesting composite character, too, because I know Hurt is in that. What's his name? John Hurt? You know who John Hurt is.
Yeah, he's the one that's reading the Stephen King book that I'm into right now.
Oh, I thought that was William Hurt.
Oh, you're right. And that's... They shouldn't be... confused, but they do, for me.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that John Hurt's known for is his voice. Like, everybody says that it's, like, the greatest voice ever or whatever. But it's interesting because John Hurt is the main character in, he's Smith. He's the main character in 1984, and also V for Vendetta, which is running really hot on the sync web right now because of Anonymous and everything. But, he's the main bad guy. He is Big Brother.
Well, in
Teta.
Fact, isn't he the rich billionaire who sends Arrowway on her way? Is that right? I have to look at that.
I think he's playing Zeus or something in this upcoming Immortals.
I
could be wrong. Let's see, John Hurt, V for Vendetta, 1984, he played Immortals. Yeah, he plays old Zeus. So that's interesting. incredible, really. But he's the main character in V for Vendetta as well as 1984. So he swaps roles. That happens a lot, too. That happens with Jack Black. Because Jack Black, well, this is interesting, because Jack Black is he's the guy who traps King Kong in the 2006 version, 2005, 2006, something like that. And then he's Gulliver's Travels, he is King Kong. He even gets tied down to a raft and sent onto another island that's covered in fog, just like King Kong is. And that's what I call a reverse role, which is
right.
The same.
Well, your video did a nice job of showing that the hero and the beast, you know, the beast is inside the hero. You know, that Voldemort, the thing that Harry is trying to save everyone from is his own darkness.
Right.
You know, so...
Lucifer and Christ are inseparable.
Right. And so, like, we were talking about Hugo Weaving, and I was thinking about, you know, the Elrond character. But all I kept thinking about is, that he's the light bringer, that he brings, you know, even though this light of, awakening is scary, you know, like, somehow, Lucifer is the light bringer.
Right. Yeah, he is, and that's it, because Hugo Weaving as Elrond is kind of like the king of the elves.
Right.
If I associate the king of the elves, there's like a lot of that has to do with DNA and how it all goes back to how the concept is basically that Jesus and Lucifer are like two parts of the same DNA. They're like the double helix twisting around itself.
Uh-huh.
It's how I've come to look at it. And a lot of blue characters have that peacock theme. Like Megamind that just came out at the very end, he wears this big peacock spread, and he calls himself Black Mamba, which is basically like a feathered serpent. And that blue guy always has that. There's the movie Rio, where you were talking a lot about Brazil lately. But Rio's poster had that kite behind him that made him look like a peacock. And his name was Blue. And that has to do a lot with just the feathered serpent. Like, that's what that theme is. It has to do with the King of the Elves is an... Oh, before I forget, the King of the Elves is coming out in 2013. That's a Philip K. Dick story that Disney, of all fucking people...
I'm excited.
I went on another tangent. I got to rope it back in. How are we doing on time?
I have 3 minutes to rope it back in.
Okay. Well, once again, man, this is, like, very enjoyable.
Yes.
Oh, before I forget as well, Jack Black, because the tagline for Gulliver's Travel is Black is the New Big. And Jack Black completed that by being in the new movie that's out in the theaters right now called Big Year. With Owen Wilson, actually. That wasn't planned, but those two crisscross right there. Whatever that means, who the fuck knows. But
yeah. Oh. Huh. I've played around with Owen Wilson a little bit, but I haven't looked at him for a while.
Before we're out, sir?
What was that?
Do you have anything to add before we leave?
No, not anything. I mean, you touched Rio and the blueness of Rio. That this is something that I've been looking at. 1982, the year, is highly connected to Brazil. And something that I've been exploring, but I'm not ready to unpack it yet. I'm trying to unpack it, but it's a work in progress, and so we'll have to see where that goes. But if you have any 1982 things, be sure and send them my way.
Yes, sir. And we will pick up where we left off. What time are we stopping on, 26 or 27?
26. Is that right? Yeah, 26.
Well, keep our fingers.
You know, I look forward to another week of think, and we'll try and package it in some sort of meaningful discussion. So that, yeah, I don't know. As we go on, hopefully there'll be some interaction if people are listening to this, and then we'll be able to expand the conversation so that we can not contain a week's worth of sync, but just, even, you know, it's like a hot air balloon, right? You need that little thin skin or membrane to lift you higher.
But until then, thanks for everything, and I'll talk to you soon, okay, Doug?
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Will.
Bye.
Take care.